This is the Moonfest Destiny podcast, number 21. Moonfest Destiny is a novel written by me in 1991, subtitled The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. If this is the first time you're listening, please go back to episode 1. Now I will read chapter 20, All the Moon. A ditty fit for drinking. As the Moon Republic's bombs flew over my head, I huddled most miserably for 2 hours of watch on Wall 3, that second day of siege. I huddled in my sentry pit and felt very devout and sorry for myself. Sarah suddenly jumped in with a water bucket and one half of one sweet biscuit. I fell in love with her again as she put her arms around me and said, "Cheer up, Jack, 'cause we is winning." "Honest?" I said. She explained that the score was 4-3 in the bottom of the third inning. "It went like this," she explained. Inning number 1, Slowpokes 1, Pesky Lunars 1. Inning 2, Slowpokes 2, Pesky Lunars 1. Inning 3, Slowpokes 1, Pesky Lunars 1. Score so far, Slowpokes 4, Pesky Lunars 3. Errors, Slowpokes 1, Pesky Lunars 0. I reckon this game began when them Pesky Lunars scored by ringing all their church bells and consecrating their cannonballs, said Sarah. But heck, we scored first, I figure, by getting 6 walls of the fort pushed up and a bomb-proof dug up, of course. She paused to duck as a round shot whooshed near. Whomp. It plopped on the rampart, showering us with dirt. It spun there on the edge, only to roll back again and bowl itself into the cold sea. I resumed, a chewing on my half biscuit. "The next inning made 2, Sarah said as she brushed dirt out of her hair. "Them pesky Lunars scored right away with a humdinger that knocked Sarge Weigert's head plumb off. But by sundown, ha! Captain Loud's 18-pounders hit 2 electric humdingers, pow and pow. And 2 of them guns of Play-Doh spilled upsy-daisy. And more than that, it's plain that with each gun we knock, we are weakening them yonder Trangies' ability to score, as today's inning shows. The Lunars earning nothing but a great big chicken egg zero. And once again, the big guns of Cappy Loud knocked the iron nose off a third cannon. Pow! It would have been and should have been the only score of the day, was it not for an error on our part, that being Vincent Childers' part, deserting and swimming the river. Anyhow, it leaves us so far with a third inning score of them pesky Lunars 3, Slowpokes 4. She kissed me and ran off to the next sentry pit. Maybe we were winning. I could see my wife's way of looking at it, but I knew that the game was far from over. We were still stuck under siege. We had only 8 days' rations left. General Lunarista had 10 tranquil musketeers for every one of us cotton balers. More than enough if he wanted to assault us. Meanwhile, he still had a handful of 12-pounders and a mortar to rain hell on our bomb-proof roof. Back in the good old bomb-proof, there was nothing to do but listen to the screech of shells and cough on the black powder smoke. I cleaned my boots and sewed on my buttons. Then I cleaned my buttons and sewed up the toe of my boot. Then I tore off my buttons and sewed them back on better. In fact, I sewed my boots to the company pennant and six-finger sleeve. I'm a pretty good seamster, but it was just too cheek by jowl down there. Presently, the men were all too silent. But for the prayers of the pious, and the prayers of the terrified, the prayers of the gamblers, the latter mingled with shouts and groans and clicking dice. Beside that, there was the snoring of the board and some blasphemous language, I am sorry to report, from the sinners, in which category I belong. Still, it all seemed pretty miserably quiet compared to the bursting bombs and leaping 18-pounders above us. Some of the men sat crammed And the Roman lounges, we call them, splintery planks laid between crates of 18-pounder caisson and crates full of Bibles. With the rise of the lead-colored sun, like a slow swooping cannonball, I woke from my dreams of Joseph Bentley's ghost, gasping, groaning, and hee-hawing like Martha Mule's braying out in the yard. So I woke up all jittery. I wanted to make up for Bentley's drowning and my part in helping him drown. But all I could figure was that there was nothing I could do ever. I was afraid of a sneaking thought that crept up of me like an engine, telling me, just forget it, like everyone else. It wasn't like any lightning bolts were spearing evil men these days, or any days past, far as I knew. Most evil men I knew got bags of gold, promotions, honors, the admirations of women, and penny press editorials advertising the example of their virtues. Now, friend, you may accuse me of doubting the triumph of good over evil, and therefore tossing the whole creed of progress out the window. But our bombproof didn't have a window. Now, I grant you, that new kind of tree called telegraph pole, which was sprouting all over the city side, countryside, and tarnation, was a kind of fruit of progress. But wasn't it just the same old tree of knowledge as in Eden, and that apple just ball lightning? Seemed to me then that progress and evil could triumph at the same time. It seemed to me then also that no lightning bolt ever would nor even could punish my awful transgression. Therefore, if it was going to be done at all, I'd have to do it myself. Trouble was, I wasn't sure what it meant. Maybe it meant stick your head in the bore of electromagnetic cannon. And maybe it meant say you're sorry and leave off liquor for 2 weeks. We were all kind of quiet and thinking too much when Half-Lit McCoy suddenly jumped up laughing. What's so funny? We demanded. I don't know, he replied and sat down all glum. To cheer him up, I asked him to play his awful rat-chewed concertina. We all sang his little composition, All the Moon, to the tune of Hear Our Prayer, O Lord. I got a glorious expectation for a sunny, fun vacation, boys. But you don't got to miss us, 'cause we'll all be back by Christmas. So sing hurrah for glory, boys. So sing hurrah for glory. We're mighty fine ballooners, gonna kill some pesky lunars, boys. And them halls of Montemuna will be one big crater tuma. So sing hurrah for glory, boys. Sing hurrah for glory. Don't got to mind our manners, 'cause we fight for freedom's banners, boys. And charity will guide our heart to any old lunar whore or tart. So sing hurrah for glory, boys. Sing hurrah for glory. Damn them Whigs who make a fuss. The moon's just the long hair of Texas, boys. We know why the U.S. is so free and brave. It's a 'cause that any man can own a Negro slave. So sing hurrah for glory, boys. Sing hurrah for glory. Soon the moon will all be free. We'll cross the cold sea with rough and ready, boys. But if he tarries back in Archie's hole, the devil's Yule log will be our burning soul. So sing hurrah for glory, boys. Sing hurrah for glory, etc. So sang Half-Lit McCoy, who lost his other lip in a brawl with a Bowie knife-fisted ranger during the 4th of July celebration in Plato's crater, I was told in 48, but not by him. The guys, what didn't have no gumption, prayed like the devil, wearing them worry beads, like they were diamonds or a tartar's or a tart's garters. Hard luck men huddled beside a red lantern, slapping cards down on the dirt, brief little gestures and grunts. With their curses and their hard, hollow faces, and that livid light underground, It was like a saloon run by Old Scratch himself. We heard the huddled card sharps. They numbered their pips by the lurid storm wash of a red lantern. It was so strange to see them wager, wildly silent, shoving piles of Liberty's Head lucre about by rote and rhythm. They slapped down the cards in the dirt. A finger curled, hit me. A hand cut a throat, call. A palm spilled, I'm out. A triumvirate of whitebeards, bitter and beaten cheaters, lost the last dregs of last month's wages to the one that played southpaw. They won their wages back just to lose them twice over again. The huddled card players played gamesome fate. The tumbled cards a little paper fort. The coins cannonballs rolling to one fate, then back to the rival fate. The metal man traded the good gold for notes three times its value, alleged in dubious wildcat script. Hellet profiled. He stuffed it down in his Esapho chute. Furnace feud, intrinsically delicious to such gourmands of combustion as he, the prince of automatons, the president of bicameral steam engines, Franklin Stove. The old-timers played about 1,000 games with my dog-chew checker set. Harold Winston was taking apart and putting back together the lock of his musket over and over again, like he was a wind-up blacksmithy. Bradley Abernathy, the Delaware kid, pining over his sweetheart, left to the tender mercies of the less patriotic lads. He slept sitting with his head on his knees, sighing, "Oh, I am despair." He made me cross. I was once like him. But a half a year of grubby, mean, and hard-hearted military life had squeezed me into a different shape. Whereas he clenched the ignorance of his innocence with a discipline that was grubby, mean, and hard-hearted. The men with beloved wives and little ones lay on their backs, half asleep. Without fully waking, they opened their eyes every time a shell landed inside the fort, blowing fire and showering iron splinters and dirt clods against the bomb-proof roof. Then they closed their eyes again. Three or four thin and tired foreign-borns who'd sign up on the balloon ramps as soon as their hungry bellies hit the States. He lay shivering and sweating with lunar fever. Already the infirmary dugout was full up with men with their springs run down from the march from Annex Agonies. So, in order to make room for the boys with shell splinters, Doc Payne said all feverish doughboys should stay put, seeing as he could well treat them here as there with Rupert's Miracle Salve and Tonic. Well, since Sheehan swim river, let's dice for his left behinds, called out the red-bearded gambler, Kidney Beaton. We dice for a burlap sack, a box of rotten snuff, a miniature of Venus, unclad, of course, holding the staff of Old Glory. Miracle of miracles, I won Venus with double box cars. I took Bradley Abernathy aside, tried to give it to him. But he made me trade it for a plug of dry tobacco so that he owed me nothing. The next day, there was a heap of excitement when a famous guest came a-knocking on the gate of Fort Slowpoke. Thank you for listening. So the narrator mentions dubious wildcat script, Hellet profiled. Well, Hellet's a fancy word for slave. And wildcat script, well, there was all kinds of paper money those days issued by private banks. And why wouldn't it have a slave on it if society considers slavery a proper thing? And they self-consciously excuse themselves with the example of Athenian slavery. And by the way, I changed the word to the original manuscript, the unpalatable N-word, I changed to Negro because I just can't bring myself to say it. Don't really want to get into censorship issue, but that's what I chose to do. Maybe you think that's a good idea as well. Oh, by the way, when they talk about swimming the cold sea, well, I was working with a map of Texas at the time, and also map of the moon, and trying to transpose the geography of Texas with the geography, the named geography of the moon. So you certainly heard of the Sea of Tranquility, made famous by the moon landings. The Mare Frigoris, that's the cold sea. And I was naming lunar craters and so on. The analog of locations in Texas, the cold sea, would be the Rio Grande. Thank you for listening. In the next chapter, indeed, as the narration states, they're going to get a historically famous visitor, which actually happened. Again, the story does follow the actual events of the siege of Fort Texas. Again, Moonfest Destiny is available on Kindle for 99¢. Please pick it up. Thank you.